Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-3776. We'll entertain the idea of the Astros potentially using a three-man rotation in the ALDS in a second. Text at 713-780-3776. Which one are you getting to? Because I was going to bring up the one about the largest point spread in NFL history.
Oh, I was going to get to the one about the two-faced neighborhood beer honk who, you know, used to be a friend of the show for years.
He's still a friend of half
back
of us.
In the way. Yeah, here's the thing.
He's friendly with
you
me.
You don't hear from the guy, and all of a sudden, you know what? He knows it all, and he's coming at it. Chief, let me just tell you something. All it takes is one click stroke, and you're gone, and it's for every show on the planet. You do nothing for me with this whole two-faced stuff.
Whoa.
So just move on with your day.
Whoa.
Go sell some more beer.
I like your friendly neighborhood.
Great. Then you guys
salesman.
Can get chummy
don't,
on Twitter.
Don't,
I could
don't,
care less. Go wear a kilt somewhere else, Chief.
Don't click him away. I want him to be part of our show. I think he's very good balance.
Don't tempt me.
Between the two of us. 713-780-ESPN. We might be looking for a replacement for your friendly neighborhood beer salesman. So
yeah.
Audition for that role. 713-780-3776. The what?
Yeah, because I'm still friends with Barry and Nick, but I should basically. Last week he was trying to say I'm the reason why they're not here, and that it's all because of me, and that maybe I'm. You know what, dude? Just go read the comics or something. Do something more constructive.
I appreciate him listening to our show.
I'm glad you do. That makes one of them.
We had another text that was asking about the biggest point spreads in NFL history because they saw the Texans Bills spread right now 17 points. I was looking at some games earlier. At mybookie.ag. I placed some of them, some early lines, to see if I can take advantage of that. The Bills-Texans games is one I'm going to be far away from. I might look at some player props later, but I'm far away from Bills-Texans 18 points. I just don't want to play that.
You've capitalized, on some early lines. And
yeah.
You know, this early in the season is the time to do it, and you can really, you know, cash in, literally. But, I mean, that's not going to change all that much. And I think that I'm always leery in those situations if the Bills call off the dogs late in a game and
right.
The backdoor cover comes about. That's too much for me to risk at this point because of the fact that, look, if Davis Mills is going to Davis Mills like all the other rookie quarterbacks has, then you got a legit chance. It's still a lot of points, right? I mean, it's like we were talking about even in college, there's a greater chance Alabama covers 44.5 with Southern Miss than it is that two professional teams getting paid to play are going to get, you know, one of them's going to bury another one by 17.5.
Especially early in the year, too. Like, you want to get your guys out of there. Like, if it's a 20-point game, like, why is Josh Allen taking snaps? And they did that yesterday. They got Trubisky some series, although they won by, like, 20-something. I try to take advantage of the early lines. I've gotten burned a few times, but I think I think I've been optimal a couple of times as well. But as far as that 18 points being like the biggest spread in NFL history, it's not even close. I found 9 that are higher, maybe even more than that. The biggest spread of all time was the Denver Broncos in Jacksonville 2013 week 6. Denver was favored by 28 points over a winless Jacksonville team. Like, could you imagine a 26-point spread?
That's too much for
a 28-point spread. 24 touchdowns in the NFL. I'm trying to find out who won that game. The final score was Denver 35, Jacksonville 19. So they covered with ease. Like, that's a big spread. Usually big spreads go towards the favorite or the underdog in the NFL.
But, you know, we were talking yesterday, at the end of last week, about the fact that in the Jets-Broncos game, that might be too many points. And I said the Broncos were going to win. Yeah, there you go. And we were going back and forth on it. I said, look, I think the Broncos are going to win, but I'm still a little leery of a double-digit spread. And yet they annihilated the Jets.
I usually try to stay away from double-digit spreads just in general, and I got tempted by the Jets, and that's why Vegas makes a ton of money off fools like me. I was reading up on the White Sox this weekend as the Astros were in the midst of a 4-game losing streak and going 0 for Oakland and getting swept by the A's as they were getting jeered by the Athletic faithful, all 5,000 strong of them. And I was reading that Tony La Russa might be entertaining the idea of using a three-man rotation. Now, this is going to be determined on the health of Carlos Rodon. Rodon's trying to bounce back. He's going to get a start before the end of the regular season. And if he looks good, then the idea of a three-man rotation, you can go ahead and kiss that goodbye. Now, if you look at the Astros' playoff history, they've been burned by three-man rotations in the past. I don't want to bring up the 1998 Padres-Astros series, but Kevin Brown might ring a bad bell in your head. Alan Ashby might ring a bad you know, reminder in your head, a bad memory in your head. But the White Sox, if Rendon doesn't go, they're thinking about using a three-man rotation with Giolito, Lynn, Dylan Cease. The idea would be that Lance Lynn would start game one, come back on short rest, 3 days rest in game four, 1 day shorter than normal. And then Giolito, who starts game two, would be on full rest for game five. Is there any way, if you're the Astros and you're Dusty Baker, you entertain the idea of using a three-man rotation of your own?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they should. I think they have too much other talent in the pitching department that allows them to be able to avoid a situation like that. If they were just depleted through injuries and or lack of belief in their pitching staff to the point where that's all that they got, and then they, you know, you get to a Tampa situation when you start with openers and you have to try and do a makeshift nine-inning game, it becomes so much more challenging on a manager you don't want that many challenges for at this point in his career. You want this team to be what it can be, and even if Odorizzi's in the bullpen and we don't know what you're going to get out of Greinke, you still have established, and look at the starts and the games, even if they didn't win them recently, McCullers, Fromber, Urquidy, even a Garcia. Those four guys alone say, you know what? And again, with their playoff experience in recent history and the fact that when they're out there, it's not too big of a moment for them, I'm going to ride with those guys, take my chances, and not deplete my pitching staff and put them behind the eight ball to start with by saying, hey, look, Lance Lynn's one thing on regular rest. It's another thing to make him come back on short rest, especially against a team that's as familiar with him as almost any other team in the league. The fact that they're down one of their horses is a massive advantage for the Astros, causing them to have to really shuffle the deck. Astros are not desperate like that.
Rendon could be back. Now, I'd put it at 50-50 right now. He's supposed to get like a tune-up start to see how much he could handle.
But then you got to wonder if he can get stretched out. We talked about it with Odorizzi and with Greinke. Same thing with him. Can he get stretched back out?
Yeah, maybe he's going like four innings in that first game. You're right. The Astros do own Lance Lynn, although I'm not sure Tony La Russa probably knows that, considering he's way up there in age. He and Dusty Baker. We have to do some prep to see if that's maybe the oldest managerial matchup in playoff history. I don't want to do that either. I don't like throwing starters out on short rest. I would say this to play devil's advocate. I mean, Lance McCullers and Framber Valdez are, in my mind, easily the two best pitchers on this in the starting rotation. If you were to go to that and it does extend to five games, one of those guys would have to go on short rest, but the other guy would have full rest for a potential game five. So now you're looking at your two best starters making four of the potential five starts in the ALDS. Problem is, one of those guys would have to be on short rest. How much do you trust it? Especially guys who don't have great control, right? Like, they don't seem like they would have a rubber arm, be able to bounce back on short rest like that.
Plus, we talk about organizations and management being overly careful with pitching arms these days. It was one thing to say you did what you did with McCullers during the World Series run before Tommy John surgery with the 27 straight curveballs or whatever it was. It's another thing to think that you would be asinine enough to say on short rest, I'm going to bring back a guy that I just signed to a long-term deal that has a massive role in whatever I do pitching going forward. I'm not going to put him in that position. And on the flip side, I got a guy that also, insert everything I just said about McCullers minus the big contract, has such a prominent role in whatever they do with a rotation going forward. I'm going to pitch him, but I'm not going to put him in a compromised position, not only for this season, but for the next season or maybe another season, by putting too much strain and wear and tear on his arm or Garcia's arm or Keedy, who's already had Tommy John and two shoulders deals this year. There's too many guys with too many variables that say don't do it.
Is there any way you would do a three-man rotation, Houston? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Lorenzo, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey, Joel, I mean, I know you have a lot of history or a lot of knowledge about good old Mike McCarthy. With Kellen Moore heating up the way that he is, do you see potential problems in any realm for any side? We know Dak loves Kellen, and to be honest, the proof kind of seems like it's in the pudding. He seems to be doing his job. If he keeps on this trajectory, I think that it's a shoe-in that he gets the nod for a head coach. So, knowing Mike McCarthy, do you either A, see Mike McCarthy holding him back, which I don't see, or do you possibly see maybe subconsciously Mike McCarthy starting to feel the heat? Because many people are asking him, you know, is there a three-year window for Mike McCarthy? And I honestly think if Kellen Moore can be patient and wait 2.5-3 years, even if anything short of a Super Bowl, I feel like the job is his, but at the same time, you know, you don't necessarily want to wait in this business. So do you see either Mike McCarthy feeling pressure and possibly hindering Dak, or did you see him, you know, full go? Is he the type of person that's going to full go, promote? And I ain't got to listen. Thank you.
Here's the thing. I think he's just got to – Kellen Moore's got to keep doing what he's doing, because Mike McCarthy is also not going to pull the plug and crap on guys that have made him look good for years. See Aaron Rodgers. The reason why Aaron Rodgers could make those disgruntled faces on the field and do all the things that he was doing while being given the leeway to change any play and call most of the plays is because he made Mike McCarthy look so good that he's a legend in Green Bay with a street named after him and a Super Bowl title. And it got him this big gig in Dallas. Now, Mike Nolan almost single-handedly got him fired 1 year into a multi-year deal because he didn't pick the right coaches. The one thing he did do wisely was keep the guy that the quarterback liked. See, Texans, it didn't work out the same way. But he kept Kellen Moore for Dak, right? So as long as the offense keeps rolling and Moore looks good, McCarthy looks good. It seems like the bringing in Quinn as the D coordinator has also gotten the heat off of that. But it's going to come down to Jerry Jones. At what point do I get frustrated enough that I'm willing to eat the majority of the remainder of the contract in the years to go and do something to get my, you know, to make a better move for my football team? Or, because Jerry doesn't like to look bad either, can I keep McCarthy in this CEO role and make sure as long as I keep those two coordinators, one, Moore will eventually get the job, and two, in the meantime, I don't look half bad for making the coaching move that I made.
It might take something like what Josh McDaniels has in New England, where it's kind of an agreement, it seems like, mm-hmm. like he's going to be the next New England coach once Belichick goes. Because I think Kellen Moore will draw interest in the NFL. He doesn't scream NFL head coach to me. And like, if you look at the offense last year without Dak Prescott, look, that's a big ask. You lose your best quarterback and one of the best quarterbacks in the league. It's going to be hard to recover from that. And he even flirted with the Boise State head coaching job when that came open. And there was some question if Kellen Moore would even be the OC for Mike McCarthy. So I don't see Kellen Moore being the next head coach for the Dallas Cowboys. I think he will get a head coaching job in the NFL. And to one of the, you know, the earlier cause points, like, he's kind of one of those young guys in this new generational wave that's taken the league by storm. I think somebody will give him a chance.
But Jeremy,
I'm not sure he'd be the guy I would go
right,
with.
Right, but I don't disagree with you. The other way, if you're going to play devil's advocate to why he wouldn't be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, it's the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones likes to make a splash. He likes everything to be a massive marketing monster that everybody's talking about. Kellen Moore's not going to make that splash. But where the Texans factor in again is you take note of how Deshaun Watson was handled and how he handled the coaching general manager searches here and going, if I sign Dak for all this money and my goal in part is to communicate with Dak and be happy, I better damn well at least talk to him if I'm not going to pick Kellen Moore to be my next head coach. And I better at least have the dialogue, because if I don't, that could backfire more so than whether he gets the head coaching job or not.
We saw a backfire here in Houston
before
all the stuff came out. Adam on Twitter saying, I wouldn't start any of our starters on 3 days rest. I feel just fine going Greinke in game four if need be, or even Urquidy. I like Urquidy more than Greinke. A texter at 713-780-3776, 7554 saying, starting pitching is the least of their worries. The bullpen is starting to be a problem again. Now, if you use less starters because you're using McCullers in short rest or Fromber in short rest, you're only using three starters, three-man rotation. That means one of those guys goes to the bullpen, so you would think that would help out the bullpen. But I tend to agree with I don't believe in throwing starters on short days rest, especially considering that they're all kind of even, in my opinion. All right, coming up next, new news on Deshaun. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Is there any chance they now turn to Deshaun Watson?
Nope, not at all. And Deshaun Watson's made it clear he does not want to play for the Houston Texans. But it's interesting because while we went into this season, the Texans really were not fielding phone calls. They really weren't. They weren't open to trade talks unless somebody was going to give them a ridiculous trade offer. More than six draft picks. They've already been offered 3 ones and 3 threes. Wanted more of that. However, I was told that this past week, their stance started to soften a little bit with that. The interesting part, you look down at Miami with Tua going down, that'd be an obvious trade partner. However, remember this. If they end up trading Deshaun Watson right now, he's eligible to play. He's eligible to play next week. He's not on the commissioner's exempt list. He's not on any suspension list. So he can play immediately. It's just to see if the Texans can actually soften their stance even more and possibly send him out of town.
new news on Deshaun Watson, or is Jay Glazer just running his mouth again? Second straight week, he's talked about Deshaun Watson on the Fox pregame show on Sunday morning.
Without regurgitating what you said to create more hard feelings, I'll just say the latter. It's once again looking for clicks, trying to find something that everybody wants to grasp onto in the pregame shows leading up to games. It's the same old stuff. It's the stuff we just asked the SI writer about. The fact that at least, you know, Connor Orr was honest about the fact that there's nothing to any of this. And then the fact that the big key for Glazers, they're going to soften up their stance and maybe not take as much. Anybody that was considering giving up six quality draft picks and young players for him right now is absolutely out of their mind and don't deserve to be in the positions they're in. So we just got to stop talking about it because it's not going to go away and it's not going to get resolved and no deals are going to get done. And if they do, then the Texans are idiots for making a deal now and taking less.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, if you're the Texans, you can't make a trade where you're sending away your best football player whenever there's not a lot of teams that are going to be involved. Like, you have to wait till the offseason where teams are shopping for quarterbacks. And more teams, it looks like, will be needing quarterbacks in the offseason, too. Like, we talk about Big Ben. He looks terrible. How much is Chicago going to have faith in Fields, right? I mean, look what Arizona did whenever they drafted Rosen. And then the very next year, they drafted Kyler Murray and got rid of Rosen. I mean, NFL teams are giving up on first-round quarterbacks left and right nowadays. Sam Darnold, the Texans' last opponent on Thursday, former first-round pick. They wanted Zach Wilson, so they traded Sam Darnold for a second-rounder. So I think more and more teams will be interested in Deshaun Watson in the offseason. The story for me when it comes to Glazer kind of reporting this news, I'm curious where he's getting it from. Like, is it the Deshaun Watson side where his agent's telling Glazer, oh, you know, the stance is softening. That way they're trying to bring teams into the conversation. Maybe they're trying to get this news out there so more teams are like, oh, wow, if they're softening their stance, maybe I should call about Deshaun Watson, kick the tires on Deshaun Watson. Like, it's certainly not coming from the team. Like, who in their right mind, if you're in the Texans front office, if you're Nick Caserio, if you're anybody involved with the Texans front office, why would you say that you're softening your stance?
It's not the Texans at all. It's Dell's Dolphins. I think Dell's Dolphins need a quarterback because of everything else they have. And these days, as we've talked about, you can manipulate the system in many different ways, and it's not just the team or the player that can do so. It's agents. It's contacts of the player or the agent. When you hear of this person in Deshaun's camp or Deshaun's agent said, or you know what, all these guys, and Schefter's the last one I thought would have needed to have to buy in to the clickbait stuff. But once he did it and crossed the line and joined the evil empire, all bets are off. I mean, the thing is anybody that's in someone's circle in the NFL will get the attention of any beat writer or personality on TV these days because they know that it sells. It's sexy information. We know sex sells. We know the fact that Schefter, you know, even on draft day when he said that the Rodgers trade that he wants, he told the Packers he wants to trade, he made that up just to get the clicks for draft night for ESPN. And the fact that he's continued to do things since then to lend itself to that. So the fact that anybody can plant a rumor out there, but you know what? Sometimes it helps get a deal done. I don't know who this is helping, though. Texans aren't going to take less than what they feel like is fair market value, regardless of all the cases. And Deshaun has to understand the league's inability to want to get involved, he thinks helps him, but it also hurts him in a lot of ways because it just continues to delay what we all hope is the inevitable, and there is a resolution at some point. You just don't know when it's going to be, but it's not going to be this year.
There's three groups of people that could be leaking this to Glazer. It's either Deshaun's people, yep, and their motive in leaking it to Jay Glazer is, okay, now more teams would call on Deshaun Watson to the Texans because now the softened stance, let's see what that softened stance is. It could be another team, like you mentioned, where if you're like Miami and you really want Deshaun Watson, but you don't want to give away the six draft picks, three first, three seconds, whatever the case may be, now you put that out there trying to put pressure on the Texans. It could be the Texans. I don't believe that to be true because what is the Texans' motive at that point?
What do you gain by that?
Unless you're just desperate to trade them. Unless you're just desperate to trade to Deshaun Watson and now you leak this information out there to try to bring more teams into that conversation. But the Texans, nothing the Texans have done has struck me of them being desperate to get rid of Deshaun Watson.
Even though it wasn't Nick Caserio, Nick Caserio is smart enough, I think, to know he might be the smartest guy in the entire organization, starting with the owner. To know, hey, look, Bill O'Brien was desperate to unload DeAndre Hopkins. Look how that turned out, and look what he took in return in a desperation move. to try and keep his power struggle in his back pocket. There's no way, learning from that, I'm going to do this and rush. I'm not going to make any knee-jerk reaction, and I'm not going to give away our most valuable asset for pennies on the dollar, because it would just be asinine, and it could be massively negative for this franchise for years to come.
Yeah, I'm with you, and pretty much all of this that we're getting each and every Sunday, Glazer's getting information from somebody, from his people, and Glazer probably also, to an extent, wants to take care of the information that he's getting, right? Like, if you're getting it from an agent, you want to give the agent a little bit of love and relay that information if that's what they want you to do. That way you can get more information down the road. So it's all that vicious cycle of what is the behind-the-scenes stuff that you see in the NFL. So Glazer's getting this, I think, from an agent, relaying that information to take care of his agent. That way he gets more stuff down the road. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Ian Rappaport saying this earlier today, the Panthers will not place Christian McCaffrey on the IR with his hamstring strain. I think that's a huge mistake. Like, because this opens the door now of McCaffrey wanting to be back before the three games he would have to miss if he was placed on the IR. I don't think it's good whenever you try to rush back a hamstring strain, especially in the NFL. This is a guy that's coming off a major injury last season. And then on top of all of that as well, Carolina's 3-0. You got some wiggle room right now.
A little, Jeremy, but you also know they're not a team that was expected to be where they are in order to stay there. No one knows the guy's body but himself, right? So if he pulled up, we saw the highlight. At first, I was trying to figure out which leg it was, because he raised both at one point or another.
Yeah,
and jumped in the air. If it didn't pop, if he didn't feel like someone hit him in the back of the leg with a bat and it didn't actually pop, then basically it's a strain and not a complete pull. And a pull would basically equate to there's a tear somewhere in the muscle. If it was just strained, that means there's no tear in it. There's no legitimately longer period of time you could wait. If he knows his body and knows, hey, it didn't pop, and yeah, I felt it, and the minute I felt it, I basically pulled up so that I didn't pull it full out, then maybe he knows something we don't and thinks that, you know, less than 3 weeks minimum, he could be back. But I'm not going to fault a guy for wanting to be back, because we already know that, you know, it's such a physical game. I get what you're saying, and he is the franchise right now, but I don't think that there's as much wiggle room as you think, because no one saw them being where they're at. And if he does go on the IR and they lose all the games until he's ready to come back, your season's over.
I agree with that. But if he plays in that third game, and that's the game that he doesn't miss because he wasn't placed in the IR, and now you lose him again, like
are they going to win the Super Bowl? No.
I mean, they want to be a playoff team. I mean,
they'd like to be, or would they?
But what does that mean, though? Like, are they going to win the Super Bowl? Like, should they just not play him ever then, because they're not going to win the Super Bowl?
In grandiose fashion, I'm saying, are they trying to make the playoffs at this point, or are they just another version of the Lions and the Texans?
No, I think they're a playoff team. Potentially a playoff team.
I don't, and I don't think that they do either. I don't think that one of Sam Darnold, with McCaffrey coming off a major injury.
But Darnold's not a rookie, though. Like, he's a veteran that
Matt
you bring
Rule's
in.
Looking at the big picture. Matt Rule's going, you know what? Look, we've made progress. So I've already made the fan base happy here. But you know what makes a lot more progress for me? Higher draft picks and more of them. As opposed to, again, when we talk about the Cinderella run, they're in a tough division. And they weren't expected to do a lot this year. So for them, I think when you look at the big picture, they should actually be pushing for him to go on.
Yeah, but not every team's going to embrace the suck. And if you start out 3-0 and you traded for a veteran quarterback, you have one of the best offensive players in the NFL, you have a pretty good receiving core, you feel like your offense is all right, you have Joe Brady, who is this wonder kid who's an offensive coordinator, they feel like they can really, you know, have a very productive offense, they have a defense that right now is the top defense in the NFL with some very good young players, absolutely that team thinks that they have playoff aspirations. And all they have to do is go 7-7 the final 14 games. But if Christian McCaffrey rushes this hamstring injury back, and now all of a sudden a 3 week injury turns into a 3 month injury, now that's whenever you're looking at draft picks and talking about winning five games.
I just think, look, if you're the Steelers and you're hanging on for dear life, and you've been a staple in the playoffs and you got to get back, it's a different story. But I think because of the fact that at the start of the year, and when you looked at this franchise, and the fact that you take a college coach in his first go-round and you don't know what to expect, but even he knows, look, we don't have the quarterback we want. We don't have a lot of the players that we want. And he's basically set the tone with the media and the fan base. This might take a while. I don't think that they're going to make a hard, hard push. They should be very proud of what they've done to start the season. And it's impressed a lot of people. And that's all he needed to do at this point. If the expectations were higher, this might be a totally different conversation. But because they're not, and because Rule's looking to make this a long-term stop on his resume, I think that not maybe to the degree of a Nick Caserio, but he says, you know what? We've already impressed the hell out of people, but
wouldn't that be more reason to put McCaffrey on the IR, though? Like, if you're having the long-term view?
It is, but it isn't, because you have a relationship with that player. And we always talk about the communication level between the player and the team. If this goes a long way to listening to the player and saying, look, you don't want us to put you on IR, and we're not saying you have to come back, you know, earlier than the time frame of what if we had put you on IR, but if this makes him happy and you want your best players happy, and again, he's going to go to bat for Matt Rhule, then basically short-term, it doesn't – you just – Play along with it for the time being.
I'd send him to an island for 3 weeks and tell him to be happy and rest
up. He's got a social media account with an internet chick that'll go with him.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Coming up next, you know, the Texans for the first time all season, not in first place. Look at the AFC South when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. Look, guys, I heard about it from Fred. I heard about it from John Granato, but not till I experienced it for myself did I become a true believer of what Doc Linville can do for you. Youthfulness, I mean, in terms of self-confidence, he can get your hair back, and it's your own hair, and he can make a difference in your life. It's minimal discomfort. I didn't feel any pain at all when I went through it a couple weeks ago. And I'll tell you this. The fact that they put you at ease every step of the way with how they treat you. The fact that the ladies that did my procedure were the ladies that did it when this first came onto the market and everyone in the country wanted to do it, and they were traveling all over to do these procedures. They're now in Houston. They're Houston-based. They work for Doc Linville, and that means they do the job for you. Go to basically, you got to check them out, because if you go and see what they're all about, you're going to be as excited as I am. Go to hairspecialistsofhouston.com. Right now, if you mention ESPN 97.5, they're going to do a free consultation for you. It's normally $150. But instead, because you are loyal listeners of the station, they're going to take care of you, and they're going to waive those fees so you can talk to the experts at Doc Linville's office and figure out how they can help. They have all different ways to do hair removal. They also have other kinds of plastic surgery. But the thing that I've seen firsthand that I know and I believe in is the neograft hair transplants, where they take the hair from areas where you have a ton of it and put it in areas where you don't, and they make a difference for you. I can't be happier with the process to this point, and I'll keep you updated, because they say you're really not going to see all the results for 6 to 9 months. But just based on what I've seen and experienced so far to this point, I'm telling you it's worth every single bit of it. You can also go to on our website and get all the details. But I'm telling you, one way or another, get in contact with Doc Linville and his office, because they're difference makers. They're difference makers for me. They can be difference makers for you, too.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. No lights come on when the crowd goes wild. Real fun sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Gus Johnson had a cigarette after that call,
which he does normally. I told you that he's like Gene Peterson. He doesn't want anybody to know, but he's a smoker.
He's the I see what you mean. I didn't know that Gus was a smoker.
Oh, you smell the nicotine someday when he used to roll into the NBA arenas. Joel Myers used to be like that. Gino used to go.
I knew that about Joel.
And Gino would go into the parking garage, and if you can see me on Twitch, but he would hold his hand like this and like wave it around, and then all of a sudden, he'd be like faking it, like, you know, just like, oh, he'd yawn, he'd put it up to his mouth, and he'd be smoking and toking a couple of puffs of the cigarette.
I've seen him on the golf course over there at Kingwood a lot.
Kingwood, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd see him do that from time to time. But Gus Johnson calling the kick six at the end of the first half in the Arizona-Jacksonville game. Worst decision Cliff Kingsbury's ever made as an NFL head coach? Trying, what was it, 66 yards, right? Tried a 66-yarder before the half. Jacksonville and Urban Meyer wisely had their return guy back deep. And anytime that ball gets caught by a returner with so many offensive linemen that have to block and a kicker and a holder, like it's a 50-50 chance, it seems like you're going to run bad boy back.
Auburn, Alabama, you know, in recent history, there have been others where, you know what, like you said, the special teams that are on the field are not tackling experts. If anything, they may be blocking or quick, you know, to try and prevent the kicker from being hit. But at the end of the day, they're not the kind of guys that are on your kick and punt coverage teams that could make a stop if necessary. So I get it that you thought it's going to be the last play of the half. My guy's got a big leg. You know, what's the worst can happen? Well, you just found out. And it wasn't fun finding out because now you're not going to be able to forget it. And this is another one of those college coaches trying to do the right thing in the pros. And there are certain things that you might pull as a college coach and get away with that you just shouldn't even consider it if you're an NFL coach. Try the Hail Mary, you know, especially because last season it worked for you. You got some guys that can go up and get it. You got a guy that can throw it where it needs to go. And your chances for success are better than relying on what could happen if you screw this up with this kick.
I wouldn't have had Justin Tucker out there in that situation. Not at the end of the first half, because it can result in 6 points the other way.
Right.
Like it just does not make any sense to kick the ball there. It was a terrible decision by Cliff Kingsbury. He's wearing it today. Meanwhile, his team bailed him out. They won in Jacksonville 31-19. Arizona now 3-0. Jacksonville falls to 0-3. Then the other AFC South matchup, you saw Tennessee beat the Colts 25-16. Neither quarterback I thought was particularly good. Henry did run for over 100 yards, though. Titans now 2-1, first place in the AFC South. So for the first time, the Texans not in first place in the AFC South.
Damn.
Question now is, do they finish in last?
No. Jacksonville's so bad. And I told you, it's not just the fact that Lawrence is going to take his lumps and he still has a ton of talent. But there's a guy like we were talking about with Fields, with the David Carr syndrome. At a certain point, you got to start worrying about, because you know what? He doesn't have enough weapons around him to wear. If he's starting to wear it every week, if he's starting to get down, if he's starting to get beat up, if he's not doing things and starting to question and lose his confidence in his abilities to play the game the right way, it could be too detrimental for the kid. And Urban Meyer doesn't seem like a guy that totally firmly gets it as an NFL head coach yet. And his offensive coordinator isn't doing things really to put Lawrence in the right positions, let alone his, you know, Daryl Bevel's not setting up that team to win on a week-by-week basis, I don't think. We saw the play calls. The one advantage they had against the Texans was the ability to run the football, and that's the last thing that they decided to do. And they did it minimally. You counted on what, one or two hands. Those are the kind of things that make me think and believe you got to be more weary of the fact that the Jags are going to suck all season long, and the last thing you need, it's one thing to say you sucked for a year because you still get all the draft picks and you reap the benefits. It's not going to be a benefit if it takes an adverse effect on the developmental growth of Lawrence.
Yeah, and Lawrence has not looked good in the first three games of the season. He's made some throws, but overall has not been a good product. The Colts have been very bad. 0-3, Carson Wentz again's not looking good. And you know, the Texans have a one-game lead on Indy. I think that they'll end up still finishing higher than the Texans.
Don't you feel like if you're the Colts and you still had Jacoby Brissett backing up Wentz, that you would be in a far better position? Because he's proven at least better than rookie backup quarterbacks in the fact that if something happens to Wentz or if you're Frank Reich and go, look, it's just not your day today and we can say you're injured or maybe it is the injuries, but I can pull you out, make sure you don't get hurt, and I have confidence the guy I'm putting in has a legit chance to beat the other team, as opposed to knowing I got to keep Wentz in there regardless of how bad he's playing, because if I don't, I have zero chance of winning, because we've seen the lack of success across the league with rookie quarterback.
Frank Reich said something along the lines after the game, too, that a 70-80% Carson Wentz was better than any other option that they had. John McClain on Twitter, he put out this tweet yesterday. I saw this because Kevin Joseph responded. He said, the general said, somebody who must be living on Pluto figured Houston viewers would rather see Chargers Chiefs rather than division rivals Colts Titans or even Bills, where Texans play next week. Pathetic. Grade F-. How bad is that? Like, there was no thought in my mind at all that I'd rather be watching the Colts-Titans game or the Bills versus the Washington football team that was an absolute blowout over the best game in the AFC. It's one of the most, it's like one of the most ridiculous things I saw yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to get any more. I have some fun sometimes with the general, but at the same time, you know what? As a whole, you look at this division, and people actually thought this might be one of the better divisions in football because of the top two teams. The fact that you don't have the top two teams, I don't know that anybody other than John McClain really wanted to see any other game in this division, right?
Like, I had my eye on it. I was watching it on Red Zone. But as far as watching one game on the TV from start to finish on the broadcast, Chiefs, Chargers, no doubt.
Chiefs, Chargers, top of the list. And we even said, because of the fact that it wasn't the Sunday night game, which it probably should have been, Buccaneers, Rams, you wanted to see that.
Yeah.
I can understand if it was the Cowboys more so because of the fact that the Cowboys have still such a fan base in Houston. But the fact that you think that, one, Houston really wants to watch the other teams in the division when they know that the division is really garbage and they don't have any interest. And the last thing that they really want to do is see the Oilers being honored and celebrated at a Titans game and rub it in even further than the Titans already did. So you don't want that either. And oh, by the way, John, there's this thing called technology these days where if you really wanted to see that game, aside from the Red Zone, there's ways to find it. Get it.
Great F minus on that tweet. The other game yesterday that had all the storylines, Cleveland beating up on Chicago 26-6. Storyline was how many times they sacked Josh Fields.
Fourth and 10. Five-man rush. Fields. Garrett almost got him again. And now Clowney will. The Browns have 9 sacks. It's the most in a game since 2015.
I called him Josh Fields because I was thinking of Yordan Alvarez and the return you had for Josh Fields when Luno was here. But Justin Fields, 6 for 20 in that game, 68 yards. He was sacked 9 times. You account for the sacks. The Bears had 47 yards on 42 plays.
Their offensive line is awful. It's just absolutely awful. And it's just another reason why, as much as everybody was clamoring to see the future of the Bears, there's no good reason to put him out there right now. That's why you could stay steadfast in your belief all year long that Andy Dalton is QB1. And within the building, at least the smart people would know you're making the right decision because you don't have the personnel around him for him to be successful, no matter how good he is or can be. The fact that you put him in harm's way that way and let him get the crap beat out of him is another reason why Matt Nagy needs to be fired. And the whole front office needs to be completely redone, and they need to be let go too. Because there's no way the front office should allow the coach to do that. There's no way the coach thinking that's in his best interest or the team's best interest or anybody's best interest that's a Bears fan or someone that's invested in the Chicago Bears. Because of the fact that you could do more harm than good. Look at Joe Burrow a year ago. You could put your franchise quarterback behind the eight ball for multiple seasons and make him damaged goods for the rest of his career. You really want that? You really want to do that? Like, if Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, who are so proud of the fact that they were able to pull the trade off to get their franchise quarterback after they screwed it up with Mitch Trubisky, then you know what you should have done? Should have done what the Bucs did with Brady. Should have done what teams do when they get a franchise quarterback that are smart, not named the Cincinnati Bengals. Immediately start making sure that he stays upright, he's protected, he's safe, and then he has weapons.
Matt Nagy was not fired after last night's game. He already had his Monday press conference. He said all 3 quarterbacks on the roster are being looked at to start this Sunday's game, whether it's Dalton, whether it's Fields, whether it's Nick Foles. We'll find out later in the week. All right, coming up next, take a look ahead to Monday Night Football, Philly at Dallas tonight, and also the Astros' day off today. But how about their rotation against Tampa, which begins tomorrow? It's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Loaded, ready, rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Cody Stutz hanging out with us here inside the studios, 975, 92. Where else would we be? The Wheelhouse coming up 3 to 7 after our show. I was saying that to ask the Wheelhouse boys about the smack they were running on Friday. What does that mean? What's going on?
Who were you talking? You were talking smack about my boy Jeremy?
I think actually it was you.
Benedict Branham over here?
Said it was Blank.
Yeah.
I said it was Blank.
I wasn't on the Wheelhouse.
I wasn't either, but they're saying the Wheelhouse boys were talking smack.
No, we talked
about JB.
Smack about Benedict Branham over here.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not what I say, man. I'm just telling
you. Called him Benedict Arnold and how it's ridiculous that he bet on both countries.
Isn't that terrible? Yeah, it's just
awful. It's
ridiculously bad.
It's
I reminded wise. Of him of that fact all weekend, actually.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to wear it. I'm not going to. One, it is wise, though. It's financial.
Well, you're going to wear the gear you ordered, right? It was on back order, but the Europe hat and
I told you they were sold out.
Right, because you tried to get it, but I'm sure once it comes back in stock, you'll still wear it proudly.
I actually have a Team USA hat from the previous Ryder Cup that I enjoy.
See, there you go.
Throw that one away.
I was thinking about wearing it on Friday, even though I bet Team Europe. But I
doesn't that actually lead to exactly what the Wheelhouse was saying then?
They weren't saying that. Apparently, they were talking trash about you.
Don't recall that at all.
That's what I got said, but I could be lying to it.
What do they have to talk trash about me? I didn't bet on Team Europe.
Yeah. Who are you going to believe, Jeremy? Me saying I don't recall?
Yeah.
Or the Twitch people?
I ought for sure.
Okay, all right, cool.
There's no doubt about
another,
it.
Another traitorous move.
You're a rookie here, Jeremy. You're going to learn real quick. Iot's not the guy that you're going to put your life savings on.
Another traitorous move.
And I'm sure I'm not going to lose any sleep whether they were hammering me or not, because I'm sure it wasn't hammering like the previous regime would have given me.
I'm just reading what I'm reading. I'm reading what I'm seeing. What did you think about Rory McIlroy losing his mind crying after the Ryder Cup? Did you see that?
Hey, man.
That was weird.
I mean, you're fellow European, so, I mean, you tell me what you thought about it.
I thought it was weird. I just told you what I thought about it. I thought it was weird.
Look, these guys get invested at different levels. I mean, some of these guys, they're going just for the fun, just for the competition. Some of these guys, it means a lot more to them.
What was your biggest takeaway from NFL Sunday yesterday?
Man, if you don't have firepower on offense, you're not going anywhere. Okay? You're not going anywhere in the National Football League. You got to have some juice to your offense. You look at what the Chargers are doing after firing their – head coach, offensive coordinator, all that, getting a new staff in there, and then Herbert's in there just dialing it up. Mike Williams looks like a
Mike Williams resurrected his career.
Big time. If I was Detroit, I'd fire Anthony Lynn today. Anthony Lynn held Mike Williams down for all those
years. This is what I keep saying, Code, even this early on in Urban Meyer. I was not sold on Urban Meyer, and I thought he wasn't made for the NFL game. But the fact that he went to Daryl Bevel, and Daryl Bevel has done exactly the opposite. You have a week one against the Texans, you have an advantage of the running game. You don't run the football. And what you're doing is basically trying to get your franchise quarterback killed.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have juice on offense, man, you just can't go anywhere. And even if you do have juice, if your wide receivers can't catch the ball, like the Ravens situation,
yeah,
you find yourself needing a 66-yard field goal to beat the Lions.
The first one got tipped to Hollywood's defense. The first one got tipped in the end zone. The next two were really bad. They were awful. I'm not going to defend
Hollywood Brown's two drops were absolutely atrocious.
I saw something on Twitter. They were trying to give them three.
I saw two pretty close together. That where Harbaugh consoled him and everybody was like, we're going to need you, bro. Which is like basically, yeah, you did screw both those up, but we still have a chance and we might need you to throw it your way again.
You need to be able to protect that firepower, though. Because like you look at Chicago. Chicago's got pieces. I mean, Allen Robinson, one of the more underrated receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, Mooney's solid. In shambles.
David Montgomery's
good.
Yeah, I mean,
their offensive line is completely trash.
They also they cut their left tackle in the offseason, too. Like this is the general manager. The general manager needs like a good season to save his job. The head coach needs a good season to save his job. And this is their offensive line. And then they're letting 78-year-old Jason Peters try to one-on-one block.
Did you see how well that worked? Where he got hit head-on and he did that stumbling drunk move where he just took three quick steps backwards and went, fell right back.
That would have been a tough task for like 30-year-old Jason Peters, much less 78-year-old Jason.
And it behooves yourself to ask the question, did he hurt his back trying to block, or when he fell over backwards and hit the small of his back the wrong way?
I also think, too, and this is a little tease for what we got going on in the Wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I think when you look at what happened with Chicago against Cleveland, there's a very interesting Texans angle to that.
I kind of did a little of that comparison shopping as well.
We did, too, yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested in your bet. Did you make a bet with BK over the Red Raiders' shortcomings?
I mean, here's the thing. I did not want to do anything substantial because I knew that was going to be the result.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I didn't think
they were going to blow up 70.
I didn't know. I will say this. It was once Texas got to 21, I looked at my buddy and I said, they're going to hang 70 on these guys. And then he was like, no, they're not. What are you talking about? And then they hung 70 on him. I was like, yep. I've seen this. When Texas Tech is bad, it is bad, man. I've seen some bad Texas
But you got a quarterback now, so if the process continues to advance and, you know, there's a possibility that in their stadium they can play better, that there's hope for you guys.
The BK thing?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how BK feels about that because I'm starting to lean that Texas might be the best team in the Big 12.
Oklahoma State's not bad.
The best team in the Big 12 is Cincinnati.
They're not in the Big 12
BYU's
yet.
The second best
also,
team
Texas
in the Big 12.
Also, Texas is better than Cincinnati right now. Cincinnati a little iffy.
Yeah, their game again. They are a little iffy. That game against Indiana, that was a tight game. Notre Dame on tap for them this week, but that'll be interesting to watch. Astros, have you let it into your mind at all that they could blow this and not win the AL West?
Blow this? No, but I was very disappointed that the discussion about the number one seed is now officially dead because I was banging that drum like you can catch the Rays, you can get them.
I didn't care.
And then this weekend happens, I was like, okay, well, all right then.
Is the stadium thing and all that, is that forced?
He's at the loss.
I just, because the first, I texted Jeremy, the first, I said, is he serious?
I am not BK's keeper, so I cannot answer that.
Well, the neck brace, too.
He'll be in at some point this week.
Yeah, we're going to ask him on the air, though. Don't ask him off the air. Don't ask him when he comes in off the
this
air.
This is the guy
be
that didn't need
thing.
A neck brace to talk to us, but almost needed an emergency room to talk to you guys
faking,
doing your show.
He's faking an injury.
Yeah, you know? I mean, does he need the Texas hammer? Because it sounds like there's a lawsuit somewhere with the neck brace.
If you could snag some workman's comp, I guess you can.
Yeah,
not a bad gig. Off the 2 days after
just started here. There's a great way to not get off on the right foot. Put a neck brace on and then say you did it on air.
He was off the next 2 days.
What else you have coming up, Cody?
Eric Edholm's going to join us, and we're going to try to wade through this all of a sudden not very good quarterback class that college has. Talk some college and some pros with him, as well as just, you know, lots of fun Monday NFL
best
stuff.
Quarterback in college football.
Oh, I think it's a kid at Ole Miss.
I do too.
He's playing
if
the best
he be,
right
if
now.
He beats Bama. Sorry to spit on you. If he beats Bama, I want him to be the Texans quarterback.
Just like that, huh?
Just like that.
I'm not going that far.
Just like that.
I will say he showed a lot of toughness, because all year long he's taken some shots too, and he's actually gotten up.
This is fascinating too, because you look at some of the teams that are really bad. The Texans could still be picking the first quarterback while not be picking number one overall.
We've got
some of these bad
teams. Because Detroit doesn't need one.
Correct. They might take one.
He's getting paid too well. You can't just walk away from that contract.
We'll just let him sit. We'll just let him, you know, finish getting paid for one more year and then go to the young guy maybe.
Yeah.
He's got more than one left, doesn't he, Goff?
I think the super expensive years is this year and next year.
Okay. All
right. Yeah. So here's the thing, though. I repurposed a lot of my Sam Howell stuff, Matt Corral.
Uh-huh.
So you can throw in the towel for Matt Corral.
Yeah,
Wheelhouse is coming up next.
They got beat this week. The basketball school there in Chapel Hill.
For Spencer Rattler anymore.
I was listening to Cody give these betting advice tips on college football last week. He went with like all these basketball blue bloods. He went UCLA, North Carolina. I think he had Duke there too. Kansas. I think he picked Kansas to win it all. He was 2-1.
I don't stab them in the back. I actually
told Cody, but I'm giving him grief over the one he lost, which was North Carolina. I'm giving Manning cast tonight my full attention. I'm going to give it a fair shake. I haven't given it a fair shake these first 2 weeks. Nick Saban's going to be on there tonight. I'm watching the entire game tonight on Manning cast.
Evidently, count how many times Peyton Manning goes to his head. They said
Does he do that a lot?
He scratches his head at all different places throughout the telecast.
That's a pretty big radius.
I mean,
there,
you can show a movie on his forehead, but
they talk about a receiver's catch radius, you know, because they can cover so much ground. Manning's got a big radius there. He's got a
kind of like
big
Bert
head.
From Sesame Street.
Exactly.
He's got that kind of size dome.
Yeah, it's a big radius. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before the Wheelhouse, a word for Fitz Roofing. Look, I'm telling you, Fitz Roofing is dedicated to Houstonians. They're going to be dedicated to you. It's everything that they do, from a leaky roof repair to a new roof on your business, on your house. You need some work done around the house and some repairs, they can do that too. They can put a fence in your yard. But you know what? No matter what they do for you, they're bringing in their back pocket the best warranties, the best ratings, and the best products in the business to make sure that you always are satisfied. Best customer service too. But if you check them out online at FITZ Roofing, you'll find out what I already know. If you need a roofing company that's going to do great work, take care of their business and take care of you every step of the way, it's Fitz Roofing. Corey's not only the owner of the company, he's the vice president of the Houston Roofers Association. Therefore, he's respected, he's an expert, and he knows what he's doing. That's who you need when you need something done around your house. Also, by the way, the best thing you can do is call them, 832-521-3001, because they do a free no-obligation inspection that costs you absolutely nothing and basically tells you all the ways they can help you and the price that it will pay. You're going to make sure that you go to them because they are reliable, they're doing great work, and they treat you like you are the only thing going and the number one priority. Check them out today, FitzRoofing.com, or get that free no-obligation inspection. 832-521-3001, Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.